Welcome to Alphabet Scoop, a new podcast from the team at 9to5 Google, where we cover everything that's happening in Google from A to Z. Thanks for joining us. If you missed our first couple shows, Alphabet Scoop is where we share our own thoughts on the week's most important stories, and when possible, we'll have some rumors and mini scoops thrown in based on the things we've heard. And it will also serve as a way to give you a rundown on everything we've covered this week, and gives us an opportunity to expand on our thoughts and our own reporting that you can find every day at 9to5google.com. So let's jump in. I'm Stephen Hall, and I'll be joined by one guest every week. This week, Abner Lee is back on with me. How are you?
I'm good, thanks. Excited to be on.
Yeah, me too. I'm really excited. This is our third week. It's episode 2, but it's our third week doing this. And for anyone listening, of course, you can head over to 9to5google.com or look up Alphabet Scoop in whichever podcast service you use and listen to our last couple episodes. So I thought, since this week was pretty slow news-wise compared to the last two, and since the show is pretty new, I thought people might want to get to know us a little bit. So what better way to do that than to talk about our Android devices and our setups and our home screens and everything else that we have? I guess I can let you start. What's your daily driver, Abner?
It's a bit complicated, I do admit. So I have a Pixel 2 running the Android P developer preview, and that is a developer preview true and true. So I went back to my original Pixel, and I'm finding that I like it so much more than the new Pixel 2.
Why is that?
Mostly it's design. The original Pixel was an iPhone 6, but the iPhone 6 is very comfortable with rounded corners versus the more blocky thing that's going on with the Pixel 2 and the coating. I know some people really love how it's a plastic coating that makes it easy to grip, but I do not like it. I like my metal cold, hard, sweet, unruined.
Yeah, so that's why
I love that phone. Yes,
the wedge, of course, the notorious wedge. For those of you that don't know what we're talking about, the wedge is kind of describes how the original Pixel had this kind of incline. It was thicker at the top and thinner at the bottom, kind of to allow the camera setup to not have a bump that stuck out. And as we know with the Pixel 2 line, Google decided that that wasn't important anymore. And that little design detail, which I loved so much, is just gone. So now we're back to a flat device with camera bumps. Yep.
How about you?
For me, my Google Pixel 2 XL is my daily driver. I'm running the latest build of Android Oreo because it's my daily driver, and I didn't want to have to use my original Pixel like you are. But I do agree with you that the original Pixel is better in some ways in the design department. I think it's controversial because the first Pixel was criticized so much for having an iPhone-like design and kind of looking, I guess, boring with those two huge bezels on the top and the bottom, and, you know, just has very bland kind of, it feels like an off-the-shelf kind of design. But at the same time, I think Google paid a lot of attention to the design because, you know, they were the first ones to have this like top third back. That was a completely new concept. No one had ever done that before. And then the wedge and, you know, other things about it that I think made it a really nice device.
Since you're using a Pixel 2 XL, I think you don't have to suffer from the bezels like I do on the tiny, small Pixel 2. So it's honestly not much of a jump. I kind of regret going to a Pixel 2 when I still so much more enjoy the original one, which has a headphone jack.
Yes, that's true. That's definitely one advantage if you're someone who uses wired headphones. But, I mean, on my side of things, I actually joked this week that the Pixel 2 comes with a headphone jack adapter, and I literally have not used it a single time. And I guess that kind of, you know, bridges over into the rest of my setup, which is I am a hardcore dedicated AirPods user, for sure. 100% of my headphone use is AirPods.
I am a die-hard EarPods user. The best headphones ever made, the most durable. I've had a pair that's lasted 3 years.
That's a very controversial topic. That's a very controversial statement right there. I think a lot of people would say that they're the worst headphones you can buy for the price.
I know. Yeah. So the main reason I like them is because they're hard-tipped. Everything else is this squishy, rubbery mess, or foam mess, and I just like hard-tipped headphones, and for me, gratefully, they fit in my ear, and they never, I can shake my head as much as I want, and it never comes out.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm wearing EarPods right now, actually, as we record this, so I definitely understand the utility of them.
With the AirPods, you've had the chance to use them on iPhones, I assume?
Yeah, I've used them on iPhones, and obviously the experience is a million times better on an iPhone. But
how about the actual pair, not the pairing, how about the actual quality of them? Because we've heard that the W1 chip does something on Android so that it improves reception there too. Have you noticed that?
Are you talking about sound quality?
Sound quality, like pairing, like the actual connection.
Okay, gotcha. So like the Bluetooth connection. I think
yeah.
I don't really know if I can say. I just know that using the AirPods with an iPhone is just a breeze, and it they automatically connect the second you open the case, and with an Android phone, they work about as well as a typical Bluetooth headset. So it's not as instant, and I do have occasions where, you know, it might not recognize them, it might not connect automatically, and I have to go into the notification shade and I have to connect to them. But I mean, it's a sacrifice I'm willing to make because I love the fit and the design of the AirPods. I mean, I hear a lot of people talk about how, you know, their AirPods fall out of their ears. I mean, I know our boss, you know, Seth Weintraub, has said that he just can't wear them at all because they literally just slip out. He doesn't even do anything. He just puts them in and they fall out. So
yeah, that is true for a lot of people as well. So
yeah, I guess, you know, 95% can wear them, but if you're in the 5%, you know, sorry, you're out of luck.
And there's the whole sound quality thing, which actual audiophiles think are garbage, so I retract my original claim.
Yeah, I mean, I would say the AirPods are about in the same league as the EarPods in the sound quality. But I've heard some people say that, you know, the AirPods are exactly the same as the EarPods, which I don't know is true. I think the AirPods are just very slightly better. I definitely notice a difference. It feels like
they definitely change the design. If you know, the slits are a bit wider, taller, and I think that somehow helps with the quality.
Yeah, and I think they give you just a little bit fuller of a sound. You definitely feel the basses a little bit better than you do on the AirPods. My biggest gripe with the AirPods, I think, and this is a dumb thing, but the way they're assembled is basically in two pieces. So there's this seam in the plastic if you look really closely. If any of our listeners have a pair, just pick them up and look at them. There's a seam in the plastic.
Breaking point.
It's a breaking point where all your earwax or whatever will build up and it just gets grimy. So, and then the same goes for the case. The case is just like perfectly contoured shape to fit the AirPods. And so you're putting in these AirPods in and out all day. The case gets really grimy. So it's really, really hard to clean. But I mean, I guess you could use a toothbrush or something and get in there, but that's probably my main complaint.
However, I also use Pixel Buds, and let me tell you, I'll take a plastic case any day. The fabric thing that Google goes for is wonderful. It's delightful, it's comforting, it's familiar. But man, I am so afraid when I have to clean my Pixel Buds case.
Yeah, I don't have any experience with Pixel Buds, so I'll just have to take you at your word on that one.
So how about other accessories for you?
My main other accessory is, as you probably know, if you've seen any picture I've posted online of myself in the last 6 months, is my Jacquard jacket. I mean, I wear it all the time. I think I've worn it at every event I've been to, CES and the Google event. And I mean, every time I get out of the house, pretty much I'm wearing that thing. And the reason is why, one, I like it as a jacket. So that alone, I mean, if I typically rotate my clothing not that much. So I might have one jacket that I wear for an entire season. And for this year, that was kind of the Jacquard jacket. And the features and the software and the smart cuff or whatever, that's all just bonus to me. So it's nice in the sense that it's a wearable and it gives me that little bit of interactivity, that little bit of functionality that lets me, control my phone, but I don't ever have to think about it, as opposed to a smartwatch where I'm charging it, having to charge it every single day, pretty much. I pretty much never have to think about it. That tag, I plug it in once every 2, 3, 4 weeks, depending on how much I'm using it. So it's awesome in my opinion.
That is awesome. How many times have you had to wash your jacket so far?
Once, only once. And that was I realized that when I was wearing it, I was one of the few people that was mentioning, oh, wow, it's, so lame that you can only wash it 10 times or Google only, guarantees it being washed 10 times. What I realized is you don't really wash your jackets that much. You don't have to. I mean, I wore it for, I think, 3 months before I washed the first time. And the only time the only reason I washed it was because I sat by a campfire for about 2 or 3 hours. And so I smelled densely smelled like burnt wood. And so I washed it and it lost a little bit of its dark blue color, but it's fine. I mean, I think that over the course of the jacket's lifetime, I will probably wash it 10 times. So not a concern. Awesome. Yeah. What about you? What are your accessories?
So as I mentioned last week, I wear an Apple Watch. Even though I don't carry an iPhone with me. Again, compared to the just rebranded Wear OS, the Apple Watch is okay. There are two parts. One is the hardware. It's at 38 millimeters. It's small and compact, and nothing on the Android Wear side comes close to that features-wise nothing comes close features-wise. On the software front, I don't really use apps on it. I use one app mostly, and it's a weather app called Carrot Weather, and it fortunately works offline. It caches the data, the weather data, and most of my complications are just for the weather, I think. And the other use is fitness, of course, because that is a awesome on-device fitness experience. It just coaches you through, sends you reminders, and you really don't need to use an iPhone. I just, every 2 days or so, because it's mostly on airplane mode, I can just sync it up with an iPhone that I have in the closet, and that's how I use
my
closet. Apple. Yes.
That's where you keep your Apple products?
I don't want it near the rest of the Android devices. Just a physical separation right there. But yeah, weather and fitness, which I think is a good transition to what our home screens look like.
Yeah, so my home screen, when you immediately unlock my phone, I have basically everything that I use every single day, which is Facebook Messenger, which, we could talk about all the drama that's happening this week with Facebook, but I have to use it to keep in touch with everyone that I know, because every single person I know has Facebook Messenger. So it's just like the universal client for me.
Same. I agree with the ubiquity of Facebook Messenger. It's everybody has that. I think it's a generational thing, honestly.
Yeah.
Because I know people just a tiny bit older than us, they don't use Facebook Messenger as much as we do.
Yeah, totally agree. I also have Maps, which is obvious. You got to have that for navigation every day. 1Password, which is my password manager of choice, which I don't subscribe to. I just keep clicking the not now whenever I get a pop-up about subscribing, because the Android app works perfectly fine without a subscription, and the Mac OS app works perfectly fine without a subscription. I just can't add new entries on Mac. It's annoying, but eventually I'll subscribe, but I can't justify whatever it is. I think it's like $10 a month or something, so I can't justify that right now. I probably should, though, honestly. I'm probably putting money elsewhere that should probably be putting into my security online. I've got Google Inbox, which is way better than Gmail in every way.
Hard disagree.
That's a contentious topic, I know. Google Allo, I use every single day. I have my wife on there, so my wife's an iPhone user, and I've convinced her to download Allo, so that's how I message my wife. And then I've got probably 4, 5, 6, maybe 7, yeah, like 7 friends in real life who have Allo and use it daily. Most of them Google bloggers. So, I got Twitter. I have a new tweet Twitter shortcut icon right above that. I realized only last week that you could make these. If you basically hold down the Twitter icon, you get that kind of force touch pop up or whatever. You can drag and drop those little shortcuts to your home screen instead of just tapping them there. So that's a new addition for me, and I really like it. And then the other thing is Google App Podcasts, which we're going to talk about more later, but came out this week. Well, it didn't come out. It's just an app shortcut for the Google app. So, I love it. I mean, it's very bare bones, but you know, it does everything I need pretty much for listening to podcasts. And if I can avoid going into the Play Music app, which I don't ever use because I'm a Spotify subscriber, then it's just nice to be able to, you know, skip that. And then I've got phone app, messages app, Play Store app, Chrome, and camera. So that's my dock. But everything else I listed is on my first page. And then my second page is basically my work page. And I've seen other people with this kind of setup, but I've got like an AdSense today so far widget at the top, which tells me my AdSense earnings for the day. And then I have a calendar widget, just, you know, Google Calendar widget, just the basic Google Calendar widget. I know people are probably going to tweet at me and tell me that I should use some other third-party thing, but Google Calendar widget is fine for me. And then I have AdSense, Google Analytics, WordPress, Feedly, and Slack up the side. And so that second page is basically my, you know, everything that relates to 9to5 Google. My work is just that second page, tap away. And then my third page is a new page for me. I never had a third page until the last few weeks. And the third page is Smart Home. So I've got Smart Home Philips Hue widgets, and then I have the Nest app, the Eero app. Don't have Google Wi-Fi, I have Eero. And then the Google Home app. And that's my whole setup.
So as I was saying, I basically have an Apple Watch for the weather, and that applies to my home screen as well. Because at any one time, I can see the weather 4 different ways. On my home screen, I have a notification in the notification bar that always shows the temperature. I'm using the Pixel Launcher's default at a glance widget. And then I have another 2 weather timeline widgets that show me a week view and an hourly view. So the top third of my home screen is just dedicated to the weather, and I love it. So moving on into non-niche uses, I try to keep everything on one page, both work and play, let's call it. So I have a folder with my RSS reader, Slack, WordPress, AdSense, just everything on one folder, kind of isolated. And then I use Google Keep. I'm a big Google Keep fan for notes and reminders, which integrates with the rest of Google's reminders. It's a bit of a mess, but it works for me. Then I have media apps. Everything else is media apps. I have YouTube. I have Pocket Casts. I need just something with a bit more features than the Google app can currently offer. Then for music, I listen to Play Music because I have uploaded my entire library there. But increasingly, I just added the YouTube Music app to my home screen because I found that they have really good mixes of my personalized listening history, and I really do hope that transfers over when Google relaunches YouTube Music. in whoever knows when. And other things, my dock is the camera app, Chrome, like Play Music again. For Twitter, I use a third-party app called Flamingo. It's highly customizable, and I used to be a big Twitter for Android fan. When they originally redesigned it, I loved it so much with the material design. But lately, I switched to something simpler because the ads on Twitter are getting a bit much. And lastly, I use Gmail because that's the only way to do email, because it's just a straight feed. There's reverse chronological feed, and no algorithm can do that better, in my humble opinion.
Okay, we can agree to disagree on that. I think the thing that attracted me to Inbox at first was, with Gmail, I feel like I always had an anxiety about archiving or deleting emails, and so Inbox to me felt like I was organizing my email, but it didn't feel like I was making any decisions, you know? So like swiping done, marking an email done in my mind for me is different than deleting an email or even archiving an email. And so I have no anxiety to mark an email done for some reason. I mean, this is purely just a mental game for me, but I have no anxiety marking an email done or swiping, you know, left to schedule a reminder for an email. But I do have anxiety in the standard Gmail app for clicking that archive button for some reason. I mean, I don't have any way to explain it, but that's why Inbox captured my attention at first, because it felt like, you know, I didn't have to make any decisions about emails. I hated like logging into my email and feeling like I had this mess of emails and I needed to make a decision about every single one. To me, that's like 50 decisions. Do I archive it? Do I reply? Do I leave it in my inbox? You know, like that's too many decisions. And with Inbox, I feel like I can go in there and if it's not immediately relevant to me, I just done. And I can always go back, you know, just like in Gmail, you can always go back and look at stuff that you've marked done or archived or whatever. Yeah, it just made email less about decisions and more about just clearing notifications. That's basically kind of the mental process that changed in my brain when I switched from Gmail to Inbox. So if anyone's not tried Inbox yet, maybe try to look at it through that lens and see if that changes your experience.
Definitely, that makes a lot of sense. I could see how the anxiety plays. And for the snooze thing, that is a useful feature. That was like my biggest attractor to why I could switch to Inbox. But then Oreo added the built-in snooze functionality on the system level, and I lost that reason to use Inbox.
Yeah, totally understandable. All right, well, in a related vein to setups, I guess, I'm still having fun smartifying my house. This week I published my Nest Thermostat E review. I don't know if I really have much to add over what I said last week just about how nice it is, but I can say that my second week with it, basically, I have touched it maybe 3 times. One, because the weather has been pretty consistent and so the temperature in my house hasn't changed much, hasn't needed to change, but two, because it's figured me out, and I've almost forgotten it's there at this point, which is, you know, a good thing in one sense because, you know, that's what it's supposed to do. But it's also disappointing because it's such a beautiful piece of hardware. I love the thing. I just love how it looks, and it's so therapeutic just to spin it and hear those clicking noises. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, they have a good sound.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's like kind of like to me, you know, plugging in an iPhone. I just love that sound. Or, you know, there's just some sounds that are just so satisfying. And one of those to me is the spinning clickiness of a Nest thermostat. It's just so awesome. But
minor detail.
Yeah.
With the thermostat E, do you think the screen's a bit low res?
Oh, definitely. And I think it's fine because it's a thermostat and just has a number. So,
true.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. The original thermostat definitely has a nicer, you know, display, higher res display. And even if maybe the thermostat E doesn't have a lower res display. Maybe it does. I'd have to look up it.
I don't think it's I remember when Nest originally announced it that there was some pushback from them that it was lower res. It's more because of the polarizer that gives it that frosted glass look in front that makes it look like that.
Yeah, it just kind of looks...
Yeah.
Yeah, it might be the same res, but it looks kind of blurry and it looks like it's low res. But it kind of gives you maybe... I would compare it to maybe an e-paper display like a Kindle. You know, it kind of like... You know, sort of like that. You kind of forget that it's a real display and you kind of... It's almost as if it's, you know, just an object. You know, it kind of makes... It makes the thermostat feel less digital and more tangible and more real, I guess. And I like
it. Nice.
And then the second thing is Nest Secure. I just had a funny anecdote this week was that I set it up the week that my wife was gone. She came back, and so I had to introduce everything to her. And so that's been an interesting thing. You know, like, she's not the most, you know, technologically savvy person. And so I kind of had
you
to explain.
You have her using Allo. That's good enough.
I do have her using Allo, and I just had to explain kind of the very basics of like how Nest Secure would work. You know, neither of us have had a security system, so it took me a whole day to figure out how to get Nest Secure to work, but how to change my, you know, routines. You know, remembering to, you know, tap the thing with the tag every time I walk in the door or whatever. And then, you know, having to relay those things to my wife is equally as difficult, if not more so. And so two times this week, she woke up and then took the dog out the back door and didn't realize that opening the back door was setting off the alarm. And so she would open up the back door, take the dog out. She would be outside. And then it's 6:30 in the morning. The Nest guard in the front of the house just went off like crazy loud and woke me up and, you know. Great, I get to be up and I get to help my wife, which is awesome. But it happened twice. It happened twice this week. So we finally figured it out, you know. Now, you know, we basically take turns waking up early to take the dog out. But, you know, now we both have gotten used to turning off the security system with the app before we open the back door in the morning. So that's just been one funny experience that I've had. And I'll probably write about that this week in my next Nest Diary entry. And then the other thing that happened this week with my home setup is that I got Philips Hue in the mail. So I've got the light strips and then a starter kit which has four bulbs, and so I'm really excited to set those up and figure out how they work with Nest. I think one of the things they do is they can turn themselves on and off automatically when you leave so that it doesn't look like the house is empty. That's one thing that they can do. And then the other thing they can do is if your Nest Protect goes off and there's a fire, you can set them to blink red or whatever to like alert the house that there's like some emergency happening. So it'll be interesting to test that out this week when I get them set up. At the moment, the light strip has one of those, you know, 3M, you know, sticky strips on the back. And so you know, sticking it somewhere feels like a permanent commitment to me. So yeah. I haven't done that yet, but I'm going to do that this week, I think, when I have my desk set up. So that's another thing is I'm setting up my office. I'm going to have a Jarvis desk and a topo mat for standing on, you know, one of those sit-stand desks. I'm probably going to put the Hue light strip on the back of the desk. We'll see. But ooh. You'll probably see me talking a bit about that on Twitter this week. And, you know, I think that's pretty much all we have to talk about in the Nest / setups / get to know us section. So let's talk about the first Wear OS watch, right?
So this week is Baselworld in Switzerland. It is the annual meeting, the annual CES of the watch world, both digital and conventional. And given the setting of Switzerland, the first Wear OS watch is made by Hublot. It is this older Swiss luxury brand, and as such, the first watch called the Big Bang Referee is a $5,000 smartwatch, much like the Tag Heuer, because it's the same parent, it's the same Swiss parent company. So for the moment, these Wear OS watches are exactly like Android Wear. They're using an Intel processor, 512s of RAM, GPS, no NFC, which is disappointing for a $5,000 watch. So far, it's the same deal.
Let's talk about that name. Big Bang Referee.
Big Bang Referee. Yep. And they're only making 2018 models, which is... this is a luxury thing, true and true. As you were saying, it's for the 2018 World Cup in Russia, which is happening in a few months. And this watch is for the ultimate soccer fan, or football fan for the rest of the world. It sends you an alert before every game. It gives you notifications about who scored, about stats, about the penalties. And then the watch faces are custom, and it shows the same information as well. Because it's $5,000, the Hublot is doing this nice thing where they include several watch bands, and one of them is personalized to your nation, where you're from, with the flag detail. That's a nice touch. But at the end of the day, it's $5,000 for basically the ESPN app, or something very similar. However, there is one more interesting thing. This watch is actually going to be used by referees in the game. So in soccer, they just introduce a goal line technology to know when the ball passes and scores. So these referees are going to be wearing $5,000 smartwatches and see when, during the competition, and see when a goal is made. So that is actually a pretty cool use of Wear OS, I do have to admit.
Yeah, speaking of Wear OS, I think this is just hilarious because, you know, with Android Wear 2.0, Google launched two, you know, very, I think, consumer-friendly products. Maybe not amazing products, but consumer-friendly products with the LG watches. And with right after this Wear OS rebrand, they're launching, which I think was kind of nonsensical in the first place, or at least we don't understand it yet. You know, besides the fact that they're just rebranding it to make it appeal to iPhone users. Mm-hmm. Or make more sense for, you know, the one third of people who use Android Wear with a iPhone. I think it's just interesting that
Wear OS is the introductory device.
The debut, yeah, exactly. The debut is a $5,000 completely niche, ridiculous device running an operating system that is a rebranded version of Google's wearable OS that is struggling and just altogether not good. So this is probably the most niche and ridiculous product of the year for at least the Android space, you think?
Yeah.
Probably going to be.
We're 3 months in and we're days into Wear OS. And this is not a good message. Honestly, if they were going to rebrand it, they should have done it at CES, where there are a lot of consumer watches from Fossil and Skaga.
Yeah, that's a good point. I think that would have made a lot more sense, because there were a couple of really nice watches, I think, in terms of physical design that launched at CES, and they kind of went under the radar because it was Android Wear and, you know, no one cares. But,
yeah,
you know, it would have helped those watches launch, I think, if Google had announced the Wear OS rebrand at CES. And I think it would have been, I feel like that feels like a CES announcement to me, you know? I mean,
definitely.
CES is typically a venue for, you know, kind of
new platforms.
New platforms and, you know, minor changes to existing platforms, and not typically used for blockbuster new products, at least not from the biggest companies. But, you know,
but Wear OS rebrand, it fits. It definitely fits with the CES style.
Yeah, for sure.
Moving on, this week was the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco. So just last week, we saw some announcements around Google Maps allowing developers to build Pokemon Go-like apps. And at the keynote on Monday for the Google Developer Day, we saw a lot of AR core announcements and a lot of Oh my god. We saw a lot of AR core announcements and a lot of Android Instant Apps. So, Android Instant Apps were renamed for games Google Play Instant. It is basically the same thing as Instant Apps, which allow you to try an app without downloading it. If you want to try this out at home, I suggest going to Google Trips, and there should be a Try Now button for you in the Play Store. But Google Play Instant is Instant Apps tuned for games. So they made some changes on the back end, they made the file size a bit bigger, and coming later this year, you would be able to try out and demo games without downloading these super large file sizes. This is one area where instant apps can make sense anywhere in any market. Actually, you can try it out right now for games like Words with Friends 2 and Clash Royale. However, the other half of GDC was AR Core, Google's revamped. It started out as Project Tango, later became Tango, which was augmented reality on phones through dedicated hardware. At MWC last month, Google announced AR Core officially, with millions of devices supporting it in the coming weeks and months. And we saw some very cool apps that support AR Core as part of this big push this week.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting to see the. This is just a random thought that just came to my brain, but the Wear OS rebrand feels very similar to the AR Core rebrand. And both of them, in a way, kind of followed Apple a little bit. At least, I mean, maybe they didn't, but it seems like they did, at least with Watch OS versus Wear OS, and then ARKit. Tango was rebranded to AR Core. And so I just think that's interesting.
That I agree. AR Core more than Wear OS, I think, seems reactionary because for years Google was really in with Tango and the idea of adding custom hardware to make this really good AR experience. But over time, we've seen that you can have just a good experience with just software, pure software.
Yeah, I mean, I was really impressed with Apple's launch of ARKit. I don't remember when that was, a year or two ago. Whenever they were demoing ARKit on stage, and all of the experiences they were showing were like as good or better than what Google had been doing with Tango with specialized hardware. And so I think Google realized real quick, maybe they had realized before that point, but I think they realized real quick that, algorithms and software we're going to be able to do the same things that they were attempting to do with hardware that they were having a very hard time getting OEMs to adopt.
Which is honestly Google's approach. They are a software company. They will.
Yeah, exactly. That's very weird, right? Isn't it weird that they tried Hank they tried Tango first and then.
It's a full reversal, and I guess this proves for them to stick with their software guns. So we saw some demo app. We saw some apps that are available now with AR Core. So IKEA and Overstock, they made these. They added AR Core integrations, and they're mostly tuned for the home. For, in the case of IKEA, demoing furniture, which, given your new home, I think this might have helped you a few weeks earlier. But yeah, these are just very straightforward, obvious use cases for augmented reality. eBay is also doing something to help you bet the package products to decide what box is f appropriate, and that's a bit cool. Google also released a Just Align AR app, which you found fun.
Yeah, I love the thing. I mean, all you have to do is, just open the app and it basically already starts creating a 3D model of whatever room you're in or whatever you're looking at, and you just tap and hold your finger on the display, and as is the name, as the name says, it draws just a line. But I was very impressed because I remember a similar demo with Tango. I don't remember when it was, but I remember a very similar demo with Tango, and this basically accomplishes similar ability, you know, drawing in 3D space without any additional hardware. It just works perfectly on a Google Pixel.
I'm curious. It's not shared, is it? There's no social aspect to it. No?
Nope. It's very simple. All you do is draw, and you can also record, and you can change the thickness of the line that you're drawing. That's it. That's all there is.
This reminds me of Tilt Brush, Google's VR drawing app. That is so cool that they've got it on a phone, which is crazy.
Yep. It's very similar to Tilt Brush, except it's obviously bare bones. It's literally just a white line, whereas Tilt Brush has unlimited options.
So we're seeing, like with IKEA and Overstock and eBay, these are tools. These are purely tools. It's a bit of a mess, because if you want to use each of these things, you need 3 spaces on your home screen, you need to find them. And would you think it's a better experience would be having all of these located in one app, in, say, the camera app, or when you launch Google Lens, and have these IKEAs and Overstocks and eBays just become extensions of the camera apps? Which approach do you think would be better for everyone?
Yeah, I think that from a UX perspective, it would be really great if, you know, there was a central app, maybe the camera app, that offered kind of like, you know how iMessage has an app store within the app? You know, I think it would be really cool if the camera app on Android phones had, you know, kind of a AR app store, for instance. From an experiential perspective, that would probably make it way easier for people to find AR experiences and use them and kind of see what AR can do for them in their life. Because at the current discoverability experience is you just go to the Play Store and you search for AR, or you search for AR Core, or you find a promotional banner somewhere, and you have to install 50 different apps to really explore the different abilities or the different, you know, opportunities there are out there for AR experiences. Whereas having everything in one place would be great. On the other hand, I really, really don't want Google to add anything to the camera app, because for the longest time, the performance of the camera app was a big problem on Android phones as a whole. in comparison to Apple, which has always had solid performance in the camera app, in my experience. Like, there has not been an iPhone, I don't think, that, you know, you pick up, you launch the camera app, and it takes any longer than a second, and you're ready to already start shooting, and you can rapidly shoot. And, you know, I've just loved the camera app on iPhones, and it was just great to see with the first Pixel, I think the first Pixel was kind of, well, they started improving with the Nexus 6P and the 5X, I think, but with the first Pixel especially, the camera app became as good or better than anything we'd seen with the camera app on the iPhones up to this point. And so from that perspective, I just want Google to stay on that track.
Stay
and
away.
Not, yeah, just don't add any bloat to the camera app, because that's critical in my opinion.
Definitely. The camera app, it's, you know, you want a camera app to just take pictures, to be really fast. Honestly, the addition of AR stickers is already encroaching on that a tiny bit. It makes sense.
Totally agree.
It wouldn't makes sense in Google Lens, but we're getting there. And the Google camera app is already doing it lightly. You go to a menu and enter that mode. I can imagine somebody like Samsung or LG just putting it lightly on the viewfinder and it being a total mess.
Yeah, totally agree. All right, so next up we have kind of, you know, you just mentioned Google Lens. We can talk about, you know, Assistant and kind of what's new in that realm of things. Google announced this week that Google Pay and Assistant integration is finally happening after being announced all the way back at I/O 17. Isn't that right?
Yep. So you can now send and request money right from the Google Assistant on both Android and iOS, so that you can say, "Hey Google, send Steven $5 for lunch," and it automatically takes care of that for you. When I said that, my phone just activated, and I think you might be getting $5 right now. But no, you have to, every transaction requires a confirmation, either a button press or vocal, and you have to, the first time you have to enter your Google password, but after that you can use your fingerprint. But on the payments front, Google Pay is on a roll. For Google, I think this has been a very good rebrand for them. They're adding features quickly. The latest are transit tickets. Yes, you can finally use your phone and stop using like tap cards. So it's starting with the Las Vegas monorail, which Google decked out at CES with assistant branding. And basically, the workflow right now is you go to a transit website, you buy a pass, and then at the end of it, there's a send to phone button, as long as you're signed in with your Google account, and it'll automatically appear on your Android phone. Just like with when you're paying, you don't need to open it ahead of time when you bring your phone to the transit pay station. You can just tap and it'll automatically bring the right one for you. So that is awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome to see in terms of new features, but I think the downside with that is that there is a huge number of like transit providers, and it's going to take a while, I think, to see this expand. You know, they're debuting this with just the Las Vegas monorail,
Just
and
the
I
monorail.
think the number of systems and companies out there that provide transit, public transit, is huge, and it's going to take a while for Google to partner with all of them or work with all of them to kind of integrate Google Pay with their systems.
Yeah, it's a shame. This is definitely a problem stateside, because I know, like in other countries like Japan, it's already a big thing. Again, on the shopping front, we have more developer assistant news. Google launched Shopping Actions this week, which integrates with Google Express, their Amazon delivery competitor. It gives you an easy way to shop. Let's say you say laundry, you type in laundry detergent in search or with your voice, and then these Targets and Walmarts and smaller shops, which is the key here, can show a carousel, and you can buy it from there with a universal cart that shows up on Home Assistant and then the desktop and the mobile web.
So basically, Google is trying to unify the shopping experience across all of its services and products so that it will hopefully benefit, you know, obviously Google's ability to compete with retailers like Amazon, but also it should benefit all these third-party retailers that are selling stuff through the Shopping Actions program. Is that correct?
And the key are these smaller mom and pop shops that can integrate and show their stuff on Google search. This is really one way to go after Amazon, which has so many retailers and so many shops.
Yeah, totally. I wonder what percentage or what cut Google's going to be taking through this program, if any.
So yeah, Google is taking a cut from this. At the moment, there are two tiers that's been reported on.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly what they were. I think I saw in the report that, you know, there's some higher or lower percentage that retailers will get based on how the searchers end up buying the product. So, I'm not sure, but obviously, you know, it'll be interesting to see how this affects Google and their partners, as well as Google's ability to compete in this space. So, next up in, you know, other notable stories this week, first we have a report that Best Buy is going to stop selling Huawei devices, which comes as Huawei continues to face scrutiny from U.S. agencies and regulators who are concerned about potential national security issues. Huawei lost all of their partnerships with carriers or potential partnerships with carriers. And so this loss with a huge American big box store is yet another blow to the Chinese company's hopes in establishing themselves in the US market. In fact, I think this might be the straw that breaks the camel's back.
Yeah, they're losing their partners left and right, and which for Best Buy, they're getting rid of Huawei laptops, smartwatches, which are the one very good thing they make, and the and the Honor Band, the cheap rebranded effort to get Huawei into people's hands, that's also being cut off.
Yeah, so it's a big blow, and I kind of have to feel like I can take maybe partial credit for this happening at Best Buy because I reported on the shady tactics that Huawei was using to get some fake reviews on the Mate 9. So obviously I don't think that I was the cause of this, but you know, maybe I am a little bit to blame in exposing that. Maybe that damaged their relationship just a little bit more than it already was potentially.
So also this week, we heard a rumor, a report from TechCrunch that Google is acquiring Lytro. So a few years back, Lytro made this camera, made this tube-shaped camera where you can refocus after you take a shot. It's a really cool concept that uses light fields, which work by recording all the light data, the intensity, the direction, which this allows you to refocus after the fact on the camera and on the web app. So, just last week, Google's VR division announced that it's experimenting with light fields to create more realistic VR experiences. And it looks like it's more than an experiment if Google is going ahead and buying Lytro for like $40 million, it's reported. So hopefully we'll get more realistic experiences in the future. So another interesting tidbit about Lytro is that Rick Ostro, the current head of Google Hardware, sits on Lytro's board. So it's not clear whether it's just for the VR division, but imagine that if this tech could possibly come to the Pixel's camera. And just imagine all those use cases where, again, software is doing the heavy work with some hardware component to complement it.
Yeah, so you know, who knows? Maybe this could have some kind of long-term implication for Google's development of the camera app or for just the Google Pixel camera experience in general. And along those veins, what other app news do we have this week, Abner?
So, Google officially announced Subscribe with Google. It is a part of their news efforts where it makes it so much easier to log in and subscribe to a newspaper. So it's like Google Pay just for media publications. The best part about it is it's automatic. As long as you're signed in to your Google account, you are signed in to these websites, whether you're clicking it to the new to search results or whatever. It's a really smart thing. That is part of their news initiative. Google, over the coming years, is spending $300 million to show that it's committed to quality journalism. In a blog post this week, Google reiterated how supporting high quality journalism is a company-wide effort. And one of those is to deal with fake news, which Google Search has gotten better about, but still needs some work on YouTube. Which brings us to the video site. At the tail end of South by Southwest, Google's music boss had a interview talking about the upcoming music service. There's a bit of a kerfuffle this week about how he said extra ads will frustrate, that is his exact quote, users to the paid music service. However, Google clarified to say that they're not showing more regular ads to users, but they will show prompts, promotional prompts to people who use music as a music service right now to get them to subscribe. We'll see how that goes. It might be annoying, and at the end of the day, YouTube admits that these promotional prompts are ads, so it's a bit of a mixed bag there. Meanwhile, YouTube is stepping up its live streaming efforts because live streams right now, especially for our generation and much younger, they're a very popular medium. So you can now live stream right from the web. No plugins, nothing. You can just start streaming by going to a website using Chrome And Google's even expanding this to camera apps from the likes of Samsung, LG, and other makers over the coming months. Lastly, as we mentioned at the top of the show, the Google app revamped, updated its podcast player. So, since 2016, Google search has showed you indexes and listings of podcasts, and you can listen right from the Google app. Now, Google is bringing it all together where you can subscribe to shows and it gives you a new home screen. Basically, you can add a home screen icon to your home screen and you can get a quick view to your shows. You mentioned you like this very simple experience.
Yeah, I mean, I love it. It's, as I mentioned, it lets me listen to my podcast and subscribe to my podcast without any extraneous features that kind of get in the way. It's very simple. You can listen to podcasts and you can subscribe to podcasts. And it's all through the Google app, so you don't have to worry about installing another app. And as I mentioned, you can avoid using Play Music, which in my case is perfect because I don't use Play Music. I use Spotify. And with all that said, I think that it would be a great idea if you head into Google App Podcasts right now, if you're listening to this, and type in Alphabet Scoop and subscribe to us there. You can also subscribe through Apple and iTunes and Pocket Casts. And you can also head to 9to5google.com to check out our RSS link, which you basically can use in any podcast app you might like. So with that shameless plug out of the way, I think it's about time we wrap this up. As mentioned last week, there's lots of exciting stuff coming up in the Google world. Baselworld technically kicked off yesterday, and as you know, we already saw our first Wear OS announcement there. It seems possible we might see a couple more, maybe. Other than that, we're still expecting that more pre-orders for Assistant Smart Displays will go live soon, and maybe in response to Apple's education event, we'll see some reactions from Google and its partners who basically own this industry. And we're so excited that we also might start to see April Fool's jokes next Friday that will perhaps give us an interesting show next week. All that said, thanks as always for joining me, Abner.
Thank you for having me. And as you said, April Fools, the Google's employee holiday is next week. So that is going to be a fun, whimsical, and for some, annoying experience on the web.
Yep, looking forward to it. So thanks for everyone that tuned into this second official episode of Alphabet Scoop. We record this every Friday and publish every Saturday morning, and you can find us in Google Play, iTunes, and as I said, Apple's podcast app, Google App Podcasts, Pocket Casts, and anywhere else you might listen to podcasts. We'll see you next week.
Bye.